Osho. And the Flowers Showered. Talks on Zen. Discourse number 11. Given at the Osho Commune International. Pune, India.
Bhagwan, a monk asked Nansen, "Is there a teaching no master ever preached before?" Nansen said, "Yes, there is." "What is it?" asked the monk. "It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not thinker."
The teachings of the awakened ones are not teachings at all, because they cannot be taught. So how to call them teachings? A teaching is that which can be taught, but nobody can teach you the truth. It is impossible. You can learn it, but it cannot be taught. It has to be learned. You can absorb it. You can imbibe it. You can live with a master and allow it to happen, but it cannot be taught. It is a very indirect process. Teaching is direct. Something is said. Learning is indirect. Something is indicated, not said. Rather, something is sown. A finger is raised towards the sun. But the finger is not the point. You have to leave the finger and look at the moon or at the sun. A master teaches, but the teaching is just like the finger. You have to leave it and look where it indicates the dimension, the direction, the beyond. A teacher teaches. A master lives. You can learn from his life, the way he moves, the way he looks at you, the way he touches you, the way he is. You can imbibe it. You can allow it to happen. You can remain available. You can remain open and vulnerable. No way to say it directly. That's why those who are very intellectual miss it, because they know only one way of learning, that is direct. They ask, "What is truth?" And they expect the answer. This is what happened when Pontius Pilate asked Jesus, "What is truth?" And Jesus remained silent. Not even a flicker. As if the question has not been asked. As if there is no Pontius Pilate standing before him and asking. Jesus remained the same as he was before the question was raised. Nothing changed. Pontius Pilate must have thought, "This man a little mad." The because he is asking a direct question, what is truth? And this man has remained silent as if he has not heard. Pontius Pilate was a viceroy, a well-educated, cultured, cultivated man. Jesus was the son of a carpenter, uneducated, uncultivated, as if two poles were meeting, two opposite poles. Pontius Pilate knew all philosophy. He has learned it. He knew this. This man, Jesus, was absolutely uneducated. In fact, he knew nothing. Or he knew only nothing. Standing before Pontius Pilate, totally silent, he replied, but the reply was indirect. He raised the finger. That total silence was the finger raised towards truth, but Pontius Pilate missed. He thought, this man is crazy. Either he is deaf, cannot hear, or he does not know, is ignorant. That's why he is silent. But silence can be a finger raised towards truth that is incomprehensible for the intellectual Pontius Pilate. He missed the greatest opportunity. He may be still wandering somewhere in search of what is truth, and that day truth was standing before him. Could he be a silent for a moment? Could he be in the presence of Jesus, not asking, just looking, watching, waiting? Could he imbibe Jesus a little? Could he allow Jesus to work upon him? The opportunity was there, and Jesus indicated it, but Pontius Pilate missed. Intellect will always miss the teaching of the awakened ones, because intellect believes in the direct way. And you cannot hit truth in such a direct way. It is a very subtle phenomenon, delicate. The most delicate possible. You have to move very cautiously. You have to move very indirectly. You have to feel it. It comes through the heart. It never comes through the head. Teaching comes through the head. Learning happens through the heart. Remember my emphasis. It is not the master who teaches, it is the disciple who learns. It is up to you to learn or not to learn. It is not up to me to teach or not to teach. A master cannot help the way he is, he goes on teaching. His every moment, his every breath is a teaching. His whole being is a teaching, a message. The message is not different from the master. If it is different, then the master is simply a teacher, not a master. Then he is repeating words of others, then he is not awakened himself. Then he has a borrowed knowledge, insight. He remains as ignorant as the student. There is no difference in their being. They differ in knowledge. A teacher and a student are on the same level as far as their being is concerned. As far as their knowledge is concerned, they are different. The teacher knows more, the student knows less. Someday the student will know more. Himself will become a teacher. He can even know more than the teacher, because it is the horizontal line of accumulation. Accumulate more knowledge, information, you can become a teacher, but not a master. A master is truth. He does not know about truth. He has become it. So he cannot help. It is not a question to teach or not to teach. It is not a choice. Even if he is fast asleep, he goes on teaching. Buddha fast asleep. You simply sit near him. You can learn much. You can become even enlightened, because the way he sleeps is totally different, the quality differs, because the being differs. Buddha eating, you just watch, and he is giving a message. The message is not separate. That's why I say he cannot help. He is the message. You cannot ask a question, what is truth? And he will not answer directly. He may laugh, or he may offer you a cup of tea, or he may hold your hand and sit silently, or he may take you for a morning walk into the woods, or he may say, look, this mountain is beautiful. But whatsoever he is doing is the indirect way of indicating towards his being. All that is beautiful, true, good is like happiness. I say like happiness because you may be able to understand. You have known a little of happiness. Maybe you have lived very miserably, as people live. But even sometimes, in spite of you, moments happen when happiness enters you. You are filled with an unknown silence, an unknown bliss. Suddenly those moments come. You cannot find a man who has not few moments of happiness in his life. But one thing, have you observed, whenever they come indirectly. Suddenly they happen, unexpectedly they happen. You were not waiting for them. You were doing something else, and suddenly you become aware. If you are waiting for them, expecting, they never come. If you are directly in search, you will miss. Somebody said that when I go swimming in the river, I feel much happiness. You are also in search, you said, then I will also come. And you follow. And you are seeking happiness. You are not concerned with swimming directly. You are concerned directly with happiness. Swimming is just a means. You swim for hours. You are tired. You wait. You expect. And you are frustrated. Nothing is happening. The bliss is no more there. And you tell your friend that you deceived me. For hours I have been swimming. Feel completely tired. And not a single moment of happiness has happened. No, it cannot happen. When you are swimming so completely that there is nobody, the boat is empty, that there is nobody in the house. The host is silent. Swimming is so deep that the swimmer is lost in it. You simply swim. You play with the river and the rays of the sun and the morning breeze, and you are simply lost in it, and there is happiness. Swimming by the side, swimming all over the river, spreading all over existence, jumping from one ray to another ray of light. Every breeze brings it. But if you expect, you miss. Because expectation leads you into the future. And happiness is in the present. It is not a result of any activity. It is a consequence. It is a byproduct. You are so deeply involved, it happens. It is a consequence, remember, it is not a result. A result can be expected. If you put 2 plus 2, the 4, the result can be expected. It is already there in 2 plus 2. It will come out. The result can be expected if things are mechanical, mathematical. But consequence is not a mechanical thing. It is an organic phenomenon. It happens only when you are not expecting. The guest comes to your door and knocks. When you were not thinking about the guest at all, it always comes like a stranger. It always surprises you. You suddenly feel something has happened. And if you start thinking about what is happening, you will miss immediately. If you say, how wonderful, how beautiful, it is already gone. The mind is back. Again, you are in the same misery thrown back. One has to learn it deeply, that all that is beautiful is indirect. You cannot attack upon it. You cannot be aggressive on it. You cannot snatch from existence. If you are violent and aggressive, you will not find it. You move towards it like a drunkard, not knowing where, not knowing why, like a drunkard, lost completely. You move towards it. All meditations are subtle ways to make you drunk. Certain ways to make you drunkards of the unknown, drunkards of the divine. Then you are no more there with your conscious mind functioning. Then you are not there expecting. Then you are not there planning for the future. You are not. And when you are not, suddenly flowers start flowering on you. Flowers of bliss. Just like Manjushri. Empty. You are surprised. You were never expecting, you never knew. You never felt that you ever deserved. That's how it is felt like a grace. Because a it is not something you have brought in. It is something which has happened. For one thing, truth cannot be taught. Bliss cannot be given to you. Ecstasy cannot be purchased in the market. But your mind continuously thinks in getting, purchasing, collecting, finding. Your mind never thinks in terms of happening, because you cannot control happening. Everything else you can control. I have heard, once a man became suddenly rich, of course, when he became suddenly rich, collected all that he has always been desiring, a very big house, a big car, swimming pool, this and that. And then he sent his daughter to the college. He always wanted to be educated, but he could not. Now he wanted to fulfill all his desires, and whatsoever he couldn't do, he wanted his children to do. But after a few days, the dean of the college wrote a letter to him, and wrote in the letter that, to be frank, we cannot admit your girl to the college because she has no capacity to learn. The father said, just capacity? Don't bother. I will purchase the best capacity available in the market for her. But how can you purchase capacity? But a man who has become suddenly rich thinks only in terms of purchasing. You think in terms of power, power to purchase, power to get something. Remember, truth cannot be got through power. It comes when you are humble. You have nothing to purchase it. It cannot be purchased. And it is good that it cannot be purchased, otherwise no one will be able to give the cost. It is good that it happens, otherwise how you will purchase it? All that you have is rubbish. Because it cannot be purchased, that's why sometimes it can happen. It is a gift. It is a sharing of the divine with you. But the divine can share only when you allow. Hence I say, you can learn it, but it cannot be taught. In fact, in the spiritual world, there are only disciples, not masters. Masters are there, but they are inactive, passive forces. They cannot do anything. They are just there, like a flower. If nobody comes, the flower will go on spreading its fragrance into endless. It cannot help. The whole thing is decided by the disciple. How to learn? How to learn from a flower? And a flower sows something but doesn't say it. It cannot be said. How the flower can say what beauty is? The flower is beauty. You have to attain eyes to see, a nose to smell, ears to hear, the subtle sound that comes to the flower when the breeze passes by. And you need a heart to feel the flower. because it drops also. Everything alive drops. The whole existence drops. You may not have observed, because it is impossible. Before you go in deep meditation, you cannot observe the fact. The whole universe breathes. And just like you expand and shrink, the whole existence shrinks and expands. Just as you inhale and the chest is full, and then you exhale and the air goes out and the chest shrinks. The same rhythm exists in existence. The whole existence breathes, expands. Inhales, exhales. And if you can find the rhythm of existence, and you become one with the rhythm, you have attained. The whole art of ecstasy, meditation, samadhi is how to become one with the rhythm of the universe. When it exhales, you exhale. When it inhales, you inhale. You live in it and not separate, one with it. Difficult, because the universe is vast. A master is the whole universe in a miniature. If you can learn how to inhale with the master and how to exhale with the master, if you can learn simply that, you will learn all. At that moment when Pontius Pilate asked, if he had known anything, even ABC of disciplehood, the next thing was to just close eyes and inhale and exhale with Jesus. Just inhale and exhale with Jesus. The way he inhales, you inhale, and in the same rhythm. The way he exhales, you exhale, and in the same rhythm. And suddenly, there is oneness. The disciple has disappeared, the master has disappeared. In that oneness, you know what truth is, because in that oneness, you taste the master. And now you have the key. And this has not been given to, remember, it has been learned by you, it has not been given to you. It cannot be given, it is so subtle. And with this key now, every lock can be opened. It is a master key, no ordinary key. It doesn't open one lock, it opens all locks. Now you have the key. And once you have the key, you use it with the universe. Kabir has said that now I am in a much difficulty. God and my Guru, the whole existence and my Master are standing before me. Now, whom do I bow first? To whose feet now I go first? I am in deep trouble. And then he says, forgive me, God, I will have to go to my master, because he has shown you to me. I have come to you through him. So even if you are standing before me, excuse me. I have to touch my master's feet first. Beautiful. This has to be so. Because the master becomes the door to the unknown. He becomes the key to whole existence. He is the truth. Learn how to be in the presence of the master, how to breathe with him, how silently allow him to move in you, how silently merge into him. Because the master is nothing but God who has knocked at your door. It is the whole universe concentrated. Don't ask questions. Live with him. Now, try to penetrate this story. It's small, but very significant. A monk asked Nansen, is there a teaching no master ever preached before? All that has been preached is not the teaching. The real teaching has never been preached. Cannot be said. Buddha said to Mahakashyap that to all others I have told that which can be told, and to you I give that which cannot be told, cannot be said. Now for 2000 years followers of Buddha have been asking again and again and again, what was given to Mahakashyap? What was given to Master Kashyap? What was the teaching that Buddha never told to anybody? That even Buddha said cannot be told, because words will not be able to carry it. Words are so narrow. The vastness of truth cannot be put into it. And they are so superficial. How can they carry the depth? It is just like this. How a wave on the ocean can carry the depth of the ocean? It cannot. By the very nature of things, it is impossible. Because if a wave exists, it has to exist on the surface. The wave cannot go to the depth, because if it goes to the depth, it is no more a wave. The wave exists only in touch with the winds. It has to be on the surface. It cannot go to the depth. And the depth cannot come to the wave, because the moment it comes to the surface, it itself becomes the wave. It is no more the depth. This is the problem. The truth is the center, and the words exist on the periphery, where people meet, where the wind and the ocean meet, where the question and answer meet, where the master and disciple meet, just there on the surface, words exist. The truth cannot come to the surface, it is the very depth, and the words cannot go to the truth, they are the very surface. So what to do? All that can be said will be just so-so. It will not be true. It will not be untrue. It will be just in the middle and very dangerous. Because if the disciple has not been in tune with the master, he will misunderstand. If he has been in tune with the master, only then he will understand, because then there exists a vapor. Understanding is not a question of keen intelligence. Understanding is a question of deep rapport. Understanding is not a question of reason, intellect, logic. Understanding is a question of deep sympathy, or even of deep empathy. Hence, the central significance of trust, faith. Understanding happens through faith, because in faith you trust in trust, you become sympathetic. In trust, rapport is possible because you are not defensive. You leave the doors open. This monk asked Nansen, is there a teaching? No master ever preached before? Yes, there is a teaching. In fact, all the teaching is there which no master has ever preached before. Then why masters go on preaching? Why Buddha went on talking for 40 years? Why I go on talking whether you listen or not? Why they talk? If that which is to be learned cannot be said, then why they go on talking? Talking is just a bit. Talking, you are caught. You cannot understand anything else. Talking is just giving sweets to children. Then they start coming to you, blissfully unaware that talking is not the point. Blissfully unaware. They come for the sweets. They come for the toys. They are happy with the toys, but the master knows that once they start coming, by and by the toys can be taken away. And by, they will start loving the master without the toys. And once that happens, words can be dropped. Whenever a disciple is ready, words can be dropped. They are just a way to bring you closer because you cannot understand anything except words. If somebody speaks, you understand. If somebody is silent, you cannot understand. What you will understand? Silence is just a wall for you. You cannot find your way in it. And silence carries a deep fear also, because it is death-like. Words are life-like. Silence is death-like. If somebody is silent, you start feeling afraid and scared. If somebody goes on being silent, you will try to escape from there because it is too much. The silence becomes so heavy for you. Why? Because you cannot be silent. And if you cannot be silent, you cannot understand silence. You are a chattering inside a monkey sitting, continuously chattering. Somebody has defined that man is nothing but a monkey with metaphysics. That's all. And that philosophy is nothing but a better way of chattering, more systematic, more logical, but still a chattering. A master has to talk to bring you nearer. The more nearer you come, the more you will drop. Once you are in the grip of his silence, there is no need to talk. Once you know what silence is, once you have become silent, a new rapport exists. Now things can be said without saying, messages can be given without ever giving. Without giving them, you can receive them. Now the phenomena of discipleship has happened. One of the most beautiful phenomena in the world is of being a disciple. Because now you know what rapport is. Now you breathe, inhale, exhale with the Master. Now you lose your boundaries and become one with Him. Now something of His heart starts flowing towards you. Now something of Him comes in you. A monk asked Nansen, is there a teaching no master ever preached before? Nansen is one of the most famous Zen masters. Many stories are told about him. What I have been telling to you many times, I will repeat again. Because the stories like that are to be repeated again and again, so that you can imbibe them. They are a sort of nourishment. Every day you have to take nourishment. You won't say that yesterday I have taken the morning breakfast, now no need. Every day you have to eat. You don't say yesterday I have taken. Now what is the need? They are a nourishment. There exists a special word in India. It cannot be translated. In English, the word exists reading. In India, we have two words for it. One means reading. Another means reading of the same again and again. It is part. You read the same thing again and again and again. Every day you read the Gita in the morning. Then it is not a reading because you have read it many times. No, it is a sort of nourishment. You don't read it, you eat it every day. It is also a great experiment, because every day you will come to new sets of meaning. Every day new nuances. The same book, the same words, but every day you feel some new depth has opened unto you. Every day you feel you are reading something new. Because Gita or books like that have a depth. If you read them once, you will move on the surface. If you read them twice, a little deeper. Thrice, you go on. 1,000 times, and then you will understand that you can never exhaust these books. It is impossible. The more you become alert, aware, the more your consciousness grows, deeper goes the meaning. I will repeat the story of Nansen. A professor came to him, a professor of philosophy. Philosophy is a disease, and it is like a cancer, yet no medicine exists for it. You have to go through a surgery. A great operation is needed. And philosophy has a similar type of growth, cancer growth. Once it is in you, it goes on growing on itself. And it takes all your energies. It is a parasite. you go on becoming weaker and weaker, and it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Every word creates another word, and it can go on infinitely. A philosopher came to Nansen. Nansen lived on a small hill, and when the flood was uphill, he was tired and perspiring. The moment he entered the hut of Nansen, he said, "What is truth?" Nansen said, "Truth can wait a little, there is no hurry. Right now you need a cup of tea. You are so tired." Nansen went in, prepared a cup of tea. This can happen only with a Zen master. In India you cannot think Shankaracharya preparing tea for you. For you and Shankaracharya preparing tea? Impossible. Or think of Mahavir preparing tea for you. Absurd. But with a Zen master this can happen. They have a totally different attitude. They love life. They are not anti-life. They affirm life. They are not against it. And they are ordinary people. And they said to be ordinary is the most extraordinary thing. And they live really a simple life. When I say really a simple life, I mean not a simplicity imposed. In India you can find such imposters all over. Simplicity is imposed. They may be naked, completely naked, but they are not simple. Their nakedness is very complex. Their nakedness is not the nakedness of a child. They have cultivated it. And how a cultivated thing can be simple? They have disciplined themselves for it. And how a disciplined thing can be simple? It is very complex. Your clothes are not so complex as the nakedness of a Jain Digambar monk. He has struggled for it for many years. They have 5 steps. You have to fulfill each step by and by. And then you attain to nakedness. It is an achievement. And how an achievement can be simple? If you work for it for many years, if you make every effort to achieve it, how it can be simple? A simple thing can be achieved here and now, immediately. There is no need to work for it. Nakedness, when simple, is a majestic phenomenon. You simply drop. It happened to Mahavir. It was simple. When he left his house, he had clothes. Then, passing by a rose bush, his shawl got caught in the thorns. So he thought, it was evening time and the rose bush was going to, it will be disturbing. So he tore half of the shawl that was entangled with the thorns and left it there. It was evening time and the gesture was beautiful. It is not for nakedness, it is for that rose bush. And the next day in the morning, with the half left, half naked, a beggar asked, and he had nothing else to give. And how to say no when you have something still left to give, that half heart? So he gave it to the beggar. This nakedness is something superb, simple, ordinary. It happened. It was not practiced. But a Zen monk practices it. Zen monks are very simple people. They live ordinary life as everybody else. They don't make any difference, because all differences are basically egoistic. And the game you can play in many ways, but the game remains the same. Higher than you. The game remains the same. I have more money, I am higher than you. I have more education, I am higher than you. I am more pious, I am higher than you. I am more religious, I am higher than you. I have renounced more, I am higher than you. Nansen went in, prepared tea, came out, gave the cup in the professor's hand, poured tea from his kettle. The cup was full. Up to that moment, the professor waited. Because up to that moment, everything was rational. A tired man comes, and you feel compassion for him. And you prepare tea. Of course, it is as it should be. Then you fill the cup. That too is okay. But then something irrational happened. Nansen went on pouring. The cup was overflowing. Then the professor became a little surprised what this man is doing. Is he mad? But still he waited. He was a well-disciplined man. He could tolerate little things like that. Maybe a little crazy. But then the saucer was also completely full. And Nansen went on pouring. Now this was too much. Now something has to be done and said. And the professor sneaked this top. Because now the tea was overflowing on the floor. What are you doing? Now this cup cannot contain any more tea. Can't you see a simple thing like this? Are you mad? Nansen started laughing and said, that's what. I was also thinking, are you mad? Because you can see that the cup is full. And it will not contain a single drop more. But you cannot see that your head is full. And it cannot contain a single drop of truth more. Your cup is full in the head, your saucer is full, and everything is flowing on the floor. Look! Your philosophy all over my hut. And you can't see it. But you are a reasonable man. At least you could see. Now see the other thing. This nonsense helped many people in different ways to awake, created many sorts of situations for people to awake. A monk asked Nansen, is there a teaching no master ever preached before? Nansen said, yes, there is. What is it? Asked the monk. Nansen replied, It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not things. No. If no master has ever said it, how nonsense can say it? The questioner is foolish. Asking a stupid question. If nobody has said, then how nonsense can say? If Buddhas have kept silent about it, if Buddhas have not uttered a single word, could not utter, then how nonsense? But nonsense would like to help even this stupid man, and there are only stupid men all around. Because unless you become enlightened, you remain stupid. So stupidity is not a condemnation, it is just a state effect. A man who is not enlightened will remain stupid, there is no way. And if he feels himself wise, then he is more stupid. If he feels that he is stupid, then wisdom has started. Then he is awakening. If you feel you are ignorant, then you are not stupid. If you feel you know, then you are perfectly stupid. Not only stupid, but so much grounded in it that there is, seems no possibility for you to come out of it. Nonsense would like to help this stupid man, because there are no others. That's why he says, he answers. But he has to use all negatives. He says nothing positive. He uses three negatives. He says, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not things. You cannot say truth, but you can say what it is not. Cannot say what it is, but you can indicate it negatively. Why are negativa? Saying what it is not. This is all that masters have done. If you insist that say something, they will say something negative. If you can understand their silence, you understand the affirmative. If you cannot understand their silence but insist for words, they will say something negative. Understand this. Words can do a negative job. Silence can do a positive job. Silence is the most positive thing, and language is the most. When you speak, you are moving in the negative world. When you remain silent, you are moving into the positive. What is truth? Ask Upanishads. Ask Quran, Bible, Gita. They all say what it is not. What is God? They all say what it is not. Three things he denies. One, it is not things, the world. It is not that which you see. It is not that is all around you. It is not that which is mind can see, can be seen by the mind, which the mind can comprehend. It is not objects. Second, it is not the mind. It is not the subject. Neither this world around you, nor this mind within you. No, these two things is not the teaching, is not the truth. But third thing, only Buddhas have denied, only very perfect masters have denied. And the third thing is, it is neither Buddha, not Buddha. And what is Buddha? The world of things, the boundary around you. The world of mind, thoughts, things, the first boundary, thoughts, the second boundary. Of course, closer. Neither you. You can draw three concentric circles. First circle, the world of things. Second circle, the world of thoughts. And then remains the third. And Buddha has denied that also. The self, the witnessing, the soul, the consciousness, the Buddha. Only Buddha denies that. All others have known that. Jesus knows it, Krishna knows it, but they don't deny it. Because that will be too much for you to understand. So they deny two things. They say this world is illusory, and the mind that sees at this world is also illusory. Mind and world are one phenomenon. Two aspects of the same coin. The mind creates the dream. The dream is illusory, and the mind, the source, also illusory. But they say, the third witnessing, you, in your deep consciousness, where you are only a witness, not a thinker, where no thought exists, nothing exists, only you exist. They don't deny that. Buddha has denied that also. He says, no world, no mind, no soul. That is the highest teaching. Because things are not, how can thoughts be? If thoughts are not, how you can witness them? If the world is illusory, then the mind that looks at the world can't be real. The mind is illusory. Then the witness who looks at the mind, how it can be real? Buddha goes to the deepest core of existence. He says, all that you are is unreal. Your things, your thoughts, and you, all is unreal. But these are three negatives. Buddha's path is the negative path. His assertions are negative. That's why Hindus called him a Nastika. They called him an atheist, an absolute nihilist. But he is not. When all these three things are denied, that which remains is truth. When things disappear, thoughts disappear, and the witnessing disappears. These three things you know, when all these three disappears, that which remains is truth. And that which remains liberates. That which remains is nirvana, is enlightenment. Buddha is very, very deep. Nobody has gone deeper than that. Insane. Many people have reached in being. But Buddha has tried to be in his saying also. He never asserts a single positive. If you ask about any positive, he simply remains silent. He never says God is. He never says soul is. In fact, he never uses the word is. You ask, and he will use the word not. No is his answer for everything. And if you can understand, if you can feel a rapport, you will see that he is right. When you deny everything, that doesn't mean you have destroyed everything. That only means you have destroyed the world that you had created. The real remains because the real cannot be denied. But you cannot assert it. You can know it, but you cannot state it. When you deny all these three, when you transcend all these three, you become a Buddha. You are enlightened. Buddha says you are awakened only when these three sleeps are broken. One sleep is the sleep with things. Many people are asleep there. That is the grossest sleep. Millions of people, 98% people are asleep there. The first and grossest sleep. They sleep with things. One goes on thinking about his bank balance. One goes on thinking about the house, about clothes, about this and that, and one lives in that. There are people who study only catalogs for things. I have heard one story. One religious man was staying overnight in a family. In the morning, as was his habit, he wanted the Bible to read a little and to pray a little. The small child of the house was passing from the room, so he asked the kid, and he said, bring that book, because he thought the child may not understand what book is Bible. So he said, bring that book which your mother reads every day. The child brought the whole earth catalog. Because that is the book the mother reads every day. People, 98% are asleep in things. You try to find out where you are asleep because the work has to start there. If you are asleep with things, then you have to start from there. Drop that asleep with things. Why people go on thinking about things? I used to stay in a house in Calcutta. The women must have at least 1,000 saris. And it was every day a problem, because when I was there, his husband and I will be sitting in the car and the husband will go on honking. And she will say, I'm coming. And it was difficult for her to decide which sari to wear. So I asked why this is a problem every day. So she took me, she said, you will be also puzzled. I have got 1,000 saris. And it is difficult to decide which one to choose, which will suit to the occasion. Have you seen people? From the very morning, they start cleaning their car, as if that is their Bible and their God. Things is the first sleep, the grossest. If you are too much attached to things and continuously thinking of things, you are asleep there. You have to come out of that. You have to look what type of attachments you have, where you cling, and for what? What you are going to get there? You may increase your things, you may accumulate a vast empire, but when you die, you will go without things. Death will bring out, that will bring you out of your sleep before death brings. It is better to bring yourself out. Then there will be no pain in death. Death is so painful because this fetter to be broken. You are to be snatched away from things. Then there is the second sleep, the sleep of the mind. There are people who are not concerned with things. Only 1% people who are not concerned with things, but who are concerned with the mind. They don't bother what type of clothes they are using. Artists, novelists, poets, painters, they are not worried about things in general. They live in the mind. They can go hungry. They can go naked. They can live in a slum. But they go and work in the mind. The novel they are writing. And they go on thinking that I may not be immortal, but my novel that I am going to write is going to be immortal. The painting that I am doing is going to be immortal. But when you cannot be immortal, how your painting can be immortal? When you are to perish, when you are to die, everything that you create will die. Because how it is possible that from death something immortal can be born? Then there are people who go on thinking of philosophy, thoughts, oblivious of things, not much worried about them. It happened once, Immanuel Kant was coming to his class. He was a perfect timekeeper. Never missed a single moment. Will be never late. Exactly right time he will enter. Never cared about his clothes, about his house or food or anything. Never worried about it. Never got married. Just a servant will do. Because that was not much a problem. And the food servant can do. And the servant can take care of the house. Never needed a wife or someone who was intimate, a friend, no. Servant was okay as far as the world of things were concerned. The servant was really the master. Because he will purchase everything, he will take care of the money and the house and everything. Immanuel Kant lived like a stranger in that house. It is said that he never looked at the house. He never knew how many rooms the house has, what type of furniture. Even if you saw something which has been in his room for 30 years, he will not be able to recognize it. But he was much concerned with the thoughts. He lived in the world of thoughts. And many stories are told, beautiful stories. Because a man who lives in the world of thoughts is always absent-minded. Absent-minded in the world of things. Because you cannot live in two worlds. He was going to his class. The road was muddy. And his one shoe got stuck. So he left it there. Went to the class with one shoe. Somebody asked, where is your other shoe? He said it got stuck just on the way. It is raining and it was muddy. But the man who asked, he said, then you could have brought it back. Said Nirmal Kant, there was a series of thoughts in my mind and I didn't like to interfere with it. If I got concerned with the Sioux, the trek would have been lost. And such beautiful thoughts were there that who cares whether you come with one Sioux to the class or two. The whole college laughed, but he was not concerned. Once it happened, he came back after his evening walk. He used to have a walking stick, and he was so absorbed in his thoughts that he did everything that was done every day. But forgot something. He was so absent-minded. He put the walking stick on the bed where he used to put himself. And himself he stood in the corner of the room where you used to put the... got a little mixed up. After 2 hours, the servant became aware that the light is on. What is the matter? So he looked from the window and he was standing with closed eyes, the corner. And the walking stick was fast asleep on the pillow. A man who is too much asleep in the mind will be absent-minded in the world. Philosophers, poets, men of literature, painters, musicians, they are all fast asleep there. And then there is a third sleep. Monks, those who have renounced the world, not only the world, but also the mind, who have been meditating for many years, and they have a stark thought process. Now, no thoughts move in their inner sky. Now, no things are there. They are not concerned with things, not concerned with thoughts, but a subtle ego, the I. Now they call it Atma, the soul, the self with a capital S, is there asleep. Not ordinary self, self with a capital S is there asleep. They are asleep there. Buddha says sleep has to be broken on these three layers. And when all the sleeps are broken, nobody is awake, only awakening is there. Nobody is enlightened, only enlightenment is there. Just the phenomena of awareness, without any center. An enlightened person cannot say I. Even if he has to use, he never says it. Even if he has to use, he cannot mean it. It is just a verbal thing. Has to be followed because of the society and the language game. It is just a rule of the language. Otherwise, he has no I feeling. The world of things disappears, then what happens? When the world of things disappears, your attachment to things falls. Your obsession with things falls. Things doesn't disappear. On the contrary, things for the first time appear as they are. Then you are not clinging, obsessed. Then you are not coloring them in your own desires, in your own hopes and frustrations. No. Then the world is not a screen for your desires to be projected. When your desires drop, the world is there, but it is totally a new world. It is so fresh. It is so colorful. It is so beautiful. But a mind attached with things cannot see it, because eyes are closed with attachment. A totally new world arises. When the mind disappears, thoughts disappear. It is not that you become mindless. On the contrary, you become mindful. Buddha uses this word, right mindfulness, millions of times. When the mind disappears and thoughts disappear, you become mindful. You do things. You move. You work. You eat. You sleep. But you are always mindful. The mind is not there, but mindfulness is there. What is mindfulness? It is awareness. It is perfect awareness. And when the self disappears, the ego, the atma, what happens? It is not that you are lost and no more. No, on the contrary, for the first time you are. But now you are not separate from existence. Now you are no more an island. You have become the whole continent. You are one with the existence. But those are the positive things. They cannot be said. Hence, Nansen said, yes, there is a teaching which no master has ever preached, because it cannot be preached. And that teaching is, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not thing. That teaching is emptiness. That teaching is absolute nothingness. And when you are not, suddenly the whole existence is stars flowering on you. The whole ecstasy of existence converges on you. When you are not, when you are not, the whole existence feels ecstatic and celebrates, flowers sour on you. They have not soured yet, because you are, and they will not sour until you dissolve. When you are empty, no more, when you are in nothingness, sunyata, suddenly they start suffering. They have soured on Buddha, on Manjushri, on Nansen. They can sour on you. They are waiting. They are knocking at the door. They are ready. Just the moment you become empty, they start falling on you. Remember it, that the final liberation is not your liberation. The final liberation is from you. Enlightenment is not yours, cannot be. When you are not, it is there. Drop yourself in your totalness. the world of things, the world of thoughts, the world of the self. All three layers drop. Drop this trinity. Drop this Trimurti. Drop these three faces. Because if you are there, then the one cannot be. If you are three, how the one can be? Let all the three disappear. God, the Holy Ghost, and the Son. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, all the three, let them drop. Let them disappear. Nobody remains. And then everything is there. When nothing happens, the all happens. You are nothing, the all starts hovering on you.